I want to start today by, well, by putting you in a very specific headspace.
Okay.
Imagine you're at the closing table for a major multifamily acquisition. It's the 11th hour.
Right.
You've got the asset managers, legal teams, the institutional capital reps. Everyone's stressed, drinking bad coffee and, scrutinizing everything. The rent rolls, environmental reports, structural surveys.
All the usual suspects.
Exactly. But there is one document, and it's a pretty significant one, that almost always gets just tossed into a digital subfolder without a second glance.
The builder's warranty manual.
The builder's warranty manual. You ask most investors or even seasoned asset managers, and they'll tell you it's just a customer service pamphlet, administrative fluff.
It's the thing you give the property manager so they know who to call if a doorknob falls off.
Right. But we have a document in front of us today that completely flips that whole narrative on its head.
It does more than flip the narrative. I mean, if you really know how to read it, it changes the valuation of the asset.
Right. We are looking at Book 6, the 10-year full builder warranty from a builder called PCM. And as we've been going through this does not read like a customer service pamphlet at all. It feels more like an insurance policy for a bank vault.
It is actually more aggressive than that. If you strip away the formatting and just look at the raw terms, this document is effectively a balance sheet bet. The builder is placing a massive financial wager against their own engineering.
And that is the core of what we're digging into today. We are taking this source material, Book 6, and we are going to try to prove to you that a warranty isn't just about fixing leaky faucets.
No, it's not.
It is actuarial proof of engineering superiority.
Yeah.
And for all the asset managers listening, we're going to argue this document is a direct mechanism for cap rate expansion.
Which is the holy grail for any institutional investor. We're going to show you how a PDF can actually increase the net operating income of an asset.
So let's start with the context. Why is this specific manual, Book 6, such an outlier? Because usually when I see a builder warranty, it feels like a shield. It feels like a list of reasons why they won't fix something.
That is the industry standard. You have to understand the incentive structure of the construction world. Most builders build to the statutory minimum.
Right.
We see references to the Ontario Building Code in the text, but this logic, it applies anywhere in North America. The code is essentially a legal definition of the worst building you can legally build without going to jail.
Just barely good enough not to fall down.
Precisely. It's a very low bar.
Okay.
So standard builders do the minimum required by law, and their warranty reflects that. It's a defensive document. They rely on the clock running out before the major systems fail. They want to limit liability.
Get in, get out, get paid.
That's the game. But PCM.
They're doing something different.
PCM is using the warranty as an offensive weapon. Look at the cover. 10-year extended home warranty, complete peace of mind. But then look closer. There is a watermark inside. Specimen sample. This is a contract template. This defines the standard condition for their product.
Why call it a weapon, though? What are they attacking?
They're attacking the concept of risk. Think about it financially. If PCM built an average product, standard lumber, standard plumbing, standard roofing, and then released this specific Book 6 warranty,
They'd be writing checks every single day.
they would be bankrupt in 18 months. The cost of servicing these claims on a standard asset would just wipe out their profit margin. Offering this level of coverage on a standard build is financial suicide.
So the only way this document can even exist?
The only way the chief financial officer at PCM would allow this to be published is if the failure points were engineered out of the physical building before the warranty was even drafted.
So the existence of the document is the proof. You don't need to see the blueprints. The liability they accept tells you what's in the walls.
It is forensic proof. It signals to your investment committee that the asset is de-risked. You don't have to trust the sales pitch. You just have to look at the exposure they are willing to carry on their own books.
Okay, that's a big claim. I want to test it. Let's go through this manual, sort of line by line, take a forensic tour of the property through the lens of this text, and see if the engineering actually backs up the bravado. Let's start at the top, the roof.
A classic failure point. In multifamily assets, water intrusion is the number one destroyer of ROI. It rots the structure, causes mold, drives tenants out. It's a disaster.
I'm looking at condition A21 in the source text. It just says water under membrane.
Okay, this is a critical distinction that most people miss because they just skim. Read the remediation column. What does it say?
It says PCM will repair. But here's the thing. Most warranties I've seen cover leaks into the living space, meaning if I have a brown stain on my drywall or water is literally dripping on my head, they fix it.
Right. That is what I call the catastrophe standard. They fix it once it has already caused damage to the interior. PCM is covering water under membrane.
Which means?
That means even if the water hasn't dripped onto your tenant's carpet yet, if the water has breached that outer layer, it is a claimable defect.
That is a much, much higher bar. That sounds like they're warranting the envelope itself, not just the absence of a visible leak.
It implies a confidence in their roofing application process that just exceeds basic code. They aren't waiting for the leak. They are guaranteeing the integrity of the shield. And look at A13 as well. Roof ridge sags.
I saw that. To minimize sagging, roofs shall be constructed to ensure the ridge does not sag under normal design conditions.
Under normal design conditions. Yeah. That phrase is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. Standard wood trusses, over time, under snow load, they deflect, they sag. A little bit of a swayback look is often considered normal aging by other builders.
Oh, that's just the wood settling. It adds character.
Exactly. But here, PCM lists it as a defect.
Which tells me, as an investor, they're likely using stiffer truss packages or better bracing or higher grades of timber.
They are engineering the sway out of the equation. They're treating the roof like a structural lid, not just a hat.
It even continues with A7 attic moisture leakage. It explicitly covers leaks through louvers or vents.
Again, this is detail work. Most leaks happen at penetrations, where a vent pipe or a chimney punches through the roof. Guaranteeing those joints means the flashing details, the metalwork, is being done to a standard that is bank vault tight.
Let's move down from the roof to the bones of the building, the framing. This was the part that really stood out to me. It felt, well, almost arrogant in its precision.
I prefer the word clinical. Arrogance is unjustified confidence. Clinical is confidence based on data.
Okay, clinical. I'm looking at section E1, floor squeaks.
The bane of every apartment dweller's existence. And a major cause of tenant turnover. You can't underestimate how much a squeaky floor creates friction between tenants.
The manual says, floor shall be free from squeaks, from loose floor system connections, free from squeaks, not minimal squeaks, free.
Do you know how hard that is to guarantee in a wood frame building? Wood is organic. It breathes, it shrinks, it expands.
Oh,
in a typical build, you use dimensional lumber 2x10s or 2x12s. You stick them in a building, you turn on the furnace, they dry out, they shrink away from the nails, and suddenly, squeak, squeak, squeak.
And usually the builder says, sorry, that's normal settling. Buy a rug.
Correct. For PCM to put free from squeaks in a 10-year warranty, they literally cannot be using standard dimensional lumber for their joists. The risk is just too high. The biology of the wood works against them.
So what are they using? The outline mentions the LVL skeleton.
Right. Laminated veneer lumber.
Mm-hmm.
Or engineered floor trusses. The text even hints at this in the exclusions where it mentions engineered floor systems are excluded from certain shrinkage rules. That implies that I is what they're using.
Explain LVL for the layperson.
Think of it like super plywood on steroids. It's engineered wood, chemically bonded. It's inert. It doesn't shrink. It doesn't twist. It doesn't warp when the humidity changes.
So they are building with materials that are chemically inert?
Essentially, they are building with materials that do not move. If the skeleton doesn't move, the drywall doesn't crack, and the floors don't squeak, they have engineered the biology out of the wood. That is that tenant proofing by design.
Speaking of which, let's look at E3, finished floor not level. The tolerance here is remarkably tight, 5 millimeters and 2,000 millimeters.
That's a ratio of 1 in 400. That is laser level precision.
Yeah.
Again, you cannot achieve that with wet lumber you just bought from the yard. That requires a manufacturing mindset, not a construction mindset.
It's interesting you say manufacturing mindset, because when I looked at the walls, specifically the structural columns, it felt like I was reading a spec sheet for a machine part, not a house. Section M15, structural column out of plumb. The tolerance is 50 millimeters in 2400 millimeters.
Now, to a layperson, 2 inches over 8 feet might sound like a lot. But remember, this is for structural integrity. If a column leans more than that, you get what engineers call eccentric loading.
Eccentric loading.
Imagine trying to balance a heavy box on a stick. If the stick is straight up and down, it's strong. If the stick is tilted, the weight pushes it sideways, trying to snap it. That creates stress. By capping that tolerance, PCM is guaranteeing the long-term structural health of the asset.
They are ensuring the building stands straight for 50 years, not just 5.
Exactly. The load path is vertical and true.
So if we zoom out for a second, we have a roof that guarantees the membrane won't fail. We have floors made of inert materials guaranteed not to squeak. We have columns guaranteed to be plumb.
You have a building where the physical plant isn't going to be the source of tenant complaints. And that is a massive massive operational advantage.
Which brings us to the money. Because as cool as NoSqueeps is, the institutional investors listening to this, the asset managers, they care about the bottom line. They are looking at NOI.
And this is where the document transforms. We stop looking at it as an engineering manual and start seeing it as a financial instrument. We need to talk about the OPEX vacuum.
The OPEX vacuum. I like that term. Break that down for us.
In a typical hold period for an institutional investor, let's say you buy a building and hold it for 10 years. Years 1 and 2 are usually fine. Everything is brand new. But years 3 through 10.
That's the danger zone.
That's the danger zone. The death by a thousand cuts phase.
Exactly.
The caulking fails around the windows.
Yeah.
The HVAC units start to lose coolant. The drywall cracks because the building settled. You're constantly sending a handyman out. $500 here, $200 there. It doesn't seem like much day to day, but it bleeds your operating expenses.
And PCM is effectively capping that leak.
Look at section H15 in the manual. HVAC, AC coolant line leaks, covered. Look at D17, windows water leakage, covered.
Let's talk about the HVAC for a second. If they're covering coolant lines for 10 years, that also implies something about the system design, doesn't it?
It does. It suggests they're likely using decentralized systems, possibly something like VRF variable refrigerant flow. In a typical old school building, you might have one giant chiller. If that breaks, the whole building goes down.
A single point of failure.
A huge one. By warranting the coolant lines individually, they are likely using a system where the risk is compartmentalized.
So play this out financially. If I own a 100-unit building, and in year 7, 10 of the AC units spring a leak in the coolant lines.
In a standard building, you pay. You take that out of your cash flow. In a PCM building, PCM pays. You have effectively shifted the liability for the mechanical and envelope failures back to the manufacturer for a full decade.
So my maintenance line item in my pro forma for the specific categories drops to near zero.
It creates a vacuum where OPEX used to be. And here is the clinical math I want your listeners to really absorb. Real estate is valued on a multiple of its income, the cap rate.
Right. Basic valuation. Net operating income divided by cap rate equals value.
So let's use a 5% cap rate, which is a fairly standard institutional target for quality assets. For every single dollar you save in annual maintenance, you add $20 to the value of the asset.
Wait, let's pause there. That's the multiplier effect.
It's leverage. $1 of NOI divided by 0.05 equals $20 of asset value. So let's say this warranty saves you a modest $10,000 a year in maintenance costs across the building.
Which is conservative.
Very conservative for a decent-sized asset avoiding major HVAC or roof repairs. So you save that $10,000 in cash flow, yes. But you have also increased the value of that building by $200,000.
Just by having a piece of paper that forces the builder to fix the AC?
Correct. The warranty effectively deletes the maintenance line item from the valuation model. When you go to refinance in year 5 or exit in year 10, your NOI is structurally higher than a comparable code-built building. Therefore, your exit price is higher.
That's why you call it a weapon.
That's why. It drives cap rate expansion.
Yeah.
It's not just about cost avoidance. It's about active value creation. You are literally monetizing the engineering quality.
But, and there's always a but, this isn't a free ride. I was reading through the homeowner's responsibility sections. PCM isn't just handing out blank checks here.
No, and you shouldn't want them to. This is where we get into the governance model. This isn't a handout. It's a partnership.
The manual is very specific about what the owner or the qualified owner has to do.
Mm-hmm.
Take section A9 regarding eaves troughs.
Keep eaves troughs and downspouts free of debris. Simple as that.
Right. If you let a tree grow in your gutter and water backs up into the roof, PCM is going to say, that's on you.
As they should. Same with N11 for garage doors. Keep the floor clear for drainage. Or C9 for doors and windows. Check caulking and sealants regularly.
So if I just ignore the building for 5 years and the caulking dries out and water gets in, the warranty is void?
Likely, yes. But I see this not as a loophole, but as a competency test. The warranty is a compact between a premium builder and a qualified owner. PCM is saying, we guarantee the engineering, the coolant lines, the trusses, the foundation, but you, the owner, must guarantee the stewardship.
You have to actually operate the building.
We have to clean it. You have to inspect it. If you do your job as a professional asset manager, they will do their job as the manufacturer. It aligns interests.
There are also some specific exclusions that I thought were interesting. They seem designed to filter out the noise. For example, K6 regarding countertops.
Countertop surfaces shall be free from anomalies, cracks, scratches, swelling, not covered.
So if a tenant drops a cast iron skillet on the counter and chips it, PCM isn't fixing it.
Nor should they. That's wear and tear. That's tenant damage. Same with C6, brick color variation. If the bricks aren't perfectly identical in shade, that's not a defect.
Why are those exclusions important for an institutional investor? It just sounds like the builder's trying to get out of work.
Quite the opposite. It protects the builder from being bogged down in frivolous complaints. You don't want your builder wasting resources arguing about the shade of a brick or a scratch on a counter. You want their reserves intact to cover the big stuff.
The structural column, the roof membrane, the HVAC lines.
Right, the ROI killers. The exclusions tell me that PCM is serious about covering the structure, not the aesthetics. They are separating asset health from cosmetic wear. And as an investor, I want my builder focused on asset health.
So let's bring this all together. We started with a PDF that looked like a boring legal requirement. And we've ended up describing a tool for financial warfare.
We went from a shield to a weapon.
If I'm sitting on an investment committee right now and I'm looking at two different deals, deal A has a standard warranty, 1 or 2 years, lots of loopholes. Deal B has this book six warranty. What is the takeaway?
The takeaway is that you are looking at two different asset classes disguised as the same thing. Deal A is buying the required. That builder offers a warranty because the law, the Ontario Building Code, Tarion, whoever holds a gun to their head and forces them to, they drag their feet, they do the minimum. You are buying unmitigated risk. You are buying a ticking time bomb of OPEX.
And deal B.
Deal B is buying the allowed. PCM offers this 10-year guarantee because their engineering allows them to. They aren't afraid of the building because they know what's inside the walls better than you do. They know they used LVL framing. They know they used the right roofing membrane.
It's the difference between buying a used car as is and buying one with a bumper-to-bumper factory guarantee.
And in the world of institutional assets, that guarantee translates to mathematical certainty. It represents a zero OPEX decade for the major systems. When you model that out, when you apply that cap rate multiplier we talked about, deal B is simply worth more money.
Because risk has a price.
And engineering is the currency that pays for it.
So here is the challenge for you listening right now. The next time a deal crosses your desk, don't just look at the pro forma rent roll. Don't just look at the location. Ask for the warranty manual.
And actually read it.
If it's a generic 3-page document full of legal disclaimers, you know what you're buying. You're buying potential headaches. You're buying the statutory minimum.
But if it looks like book six, you're buying engineering. You're buying a balance sheet bet that the builder has already won.
And that is a very different conversation to have with your investment committee. Think about that when you're underwriting your next acquisition. That's it for this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.